welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Well, today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about three different topics. First of all, I get the use of one of my students, Dr. Chris Raffo. He is a sports medicine doctor and an orthopedic surgeon, and he and I discuss the use of the kinetic chain in your body, which is basically the correct use of your body, correct order of usage of your body parts to create power. So we're going to discuss how to correctly use your body to create power in your tennis game. After that, I'm going to answer a listener question having to do with which grip you should be waiting in doubles on the baseline. And I'm going to discuss some basic tactical issues in doubles as well, having to do with that same question. As most of you probably know, I usually release these episodes on Mondays. However, my wife and I are out of town on vacation this coming Monday. We're leaving on Friday of this week. That's why I'm releasing this podcast on Thursday night. So you guys are lucky. You get it a couple days in advance, and I will be back for the next episode on November 1st, which is the next Monday after that. And by the way, if any of you are located around or near Cape Canaveral, Florida, send me an email and let me know, because I'm going to be there on next Thursday, which is Thanksgiving. Obviously a busy day for most people, but let me know if you're available, and maybe we can get together and chat. That might be fun. Just send me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com. All right, let's get down to business. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for the Essential Tennis Focus topic of the week.
My guest on the podcast today is Dr. Chris Raffo. He is an orthopedic surgeon, and he specializes in sports medicine. And he has offices in Germantown, Maryland, and also Silver Spring, Maryland. And Chris actually happens to be a student of mine at the club where I teach. And the other day we were discussing the kinetic chain and generating power through that process. So we thought it'd be fun to have him on the podcast and have a little discussion about creating power in your tennis game by using your body correctly, basically. So, Dr. Chris, welcome to the show. I'm happy to have you here.
Thank you, Ian. I'm glad to be here.
This topic was originally brought up by Charles on the forums at EssentialTennis.com, and he basically just wanted a discussion on the podcast of generating power, generating pace in your shots in tennis. And sports medicine is what you do, and we had a little talk about it on the court, I remember, during one of our lessons. I'm happy to have you here. So go ahead and get started. What can you tell us about generating power and how it relates to use of the body?
So the concept of the kinetic chain is fairly straightforward, and it's one that everybody knows intuitively but maybe has not thought of.
Okay.
And the concept is that power, either in a throwing sport or in a racket sport, comes from the large, sort of much more massive lower extremity muscles and core muscles, and by rotation of the body weight. And that force, that power, is then transferred to the small muscles of the upper extremity and ultimately to either the ball or the racket, and then ultimately the ball anyway. So the best example that everyone can conceptualize is the baseball pitcher.
Okay.
But it's exactly analogous in hitting a tennis serve and ultimately hitting a tennis ground stroke.
Sure.
The reason it's so intuitive with the baseball pitcher is everybody's seen the baseball pitcher do the windup. So they lift up their lead leg, and then by throwing that leg down and rotating their body relatively violently, they create a lot of angular acceleration and velocity, which is then transferred quite violently through the core into the shoulder and the elbow and ultimately to the ball. That's what allows them to throw the ball at 90 or 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they get so much power in baseball that there's a whole, you know, whole specialty practically devoted to treating baseball pitchers' shoulder and elbow injuries because they're extremely prone to that due to the power that they generate. The reason it's not quite as much of a problem in tennis is that you have the tremendous mechanical advantage created by the racket and the ability of the racket to generate its power that,
sure.
With a longer lever arm, and you don't have those same violent forces through the shoulder and elbow. But it's the same concept in tennis. Instead of winding up your lead leg, you kind of you load your thighs when you bend your knees as you throw the ball up and get into the position to hit the tennis ball, and then as you you generate all the power through the legs again, and then it gets ultimately transferred to the racket. And the key with kinetic chain, as we discussed on the court, is that the upper extremity has to be relaxed, because if it's not relaxed, you don't transfer that power that's created in the legs and in the core to the upper extremity and ultimately to the ball or racket, because the tense muscles absorb energy, thereby taking away from your game. So in ground strokes, it's the same concept. You generate it with the rotation of your body and with your lower extremities, and then that's how you create pace on the ball.
Gotcha. Wow, that was a nice explanation there. And yeah, it certainly makes sense, and you're right. The baseball pitcher is definitely something anybody can visualize easily. But I think the problem for most people in my experience teaching is they'll watch in any sport, you know, football, baseball, or tennis, where there's that transfer of energy from the core on down through whatever extremity is being used. I don't think people see relaxation there, you know, especially at higher levels where you're seeing, and I like how you use the word violence to describe the acceleration. I think most people assume there must be a great deal of, you know, people think of like lifting weights and like being tense and like straining. And I see that so often on the court. How can people get away from that tension and stand relaxed to allow that acceleration to flow smoothly?
Well, it's difficult, and as you know better than anyone, it's something, it's hard to explain to someone. It's almost
yeah.
something you have to experience, how much better you can generate power when your arm is relaxed. And that's something that you've taught me in our lessons, is that you have to really think of the upper extremity in tennis as a like a piece of spaghetti. You know, it's
sure,
just a
sure.
whip. And the end of the whip has to be relaxed, or it doesn't function the right way. And so, you know, it's something that you really have to go out and experience before you can understand it, because it is counterintuitive. You think, wow, you look at the way Andy Roddick hits, and
yeah.
it seems like he's using all upper extremity, but obviously he's not.
Yeah, I was actually just going to comment on that next. I was going to say it is counterintuitive to think that everything would be loose, and yet you're trying to put that much effort and energy. It seems like the muscles must be tight at some point to transfer that much energy through your body. So what's been the key? And, you know, we both know, you and I have worked on this quite a bit, on your forehand side and on your backhand side off the ground. And you said a second ago something I think is very smart. You almost have to just experience it for yourself. But what's been the key for you in, I guess, making that transition from being tighter to looser? And I know you've gone back and forth, you know, here and there, having more success at sometimes than others. But describe the feeling between when you're doing it correctly and not correctly. And do you have any insight on how other players around your level can, identify that?
Well, there are some techniques that are helpful, I think, and one is to hold the racket loosely, because it reminds you that you want your upper extremities to be relaxed, and
sure, yeah.
Try and use other ways to relax your body, deep breaths, and make sure that your posture is relaxed and then you're in the athletic stance, because you need to make a conscious effort to have your upper extremities relaxed, or at least for me, the tendency is to over-tighten. Mm-hmm. And if it keeps coming back to the science of it, you know, the little muscles of the upper extremity, your rotator cuff muscles, those are the muscles that are creating rotation for the serve in tennis or for ground strokes. They just can't compete with the huge muscles of the hip and the lower extremities and then the back.
Yeah.
And so you have to make a conscious effort to allow them to relax, to transfer that power. And it's something that, you know, it either comes naturally to people or it's something that people have to work on. But it is something you have to feel to understand, I think.
Okay. So for you, it's definitely been a conscious, you know, at least for right now, you're having to physically, consciously kind of force yourself to loosen up, right?
Exactly. And it does make a tremendous difference. So the days I feel relaxed, I hit the ball much better, at least by my eye, than the days I feel tense.
Definitely. I agree with you. Well, what was the next thing I was going to say? As far as being tense, and this is something, the way that you've described it is the way I try to describe it to students every day. I mean, it makes sense that, you know, you look at your core or your legs, you know, your shoulders or back, and it's just physically so much bigger than smaller parts of your body, like your wrist or your forearm. And yeah, logically, it makes sense. Well, sure, I should be using the bigger parts more, and yet it seems like so many people focus on, one of my least favorite phrases in tennis is wrist snap. I hate that phrase because if you're using the rest of your body correctly, you really shouldn't even have to be thinking about transfer of a kind of acceleration through that part of your body. That's how a lot of injuries are created as well, isn't it? By kind of overuse of smaller muscles like that?
Absolutely. And again, if you go back to the baseball pitcher, the forces that are created from the violent acceleration in baseball are so tremendous that everybody's probably, or maybe not in this circle, but most people have heard of the Tommy John procedure, which is an elbow reconstruction for baseball players. And the forces that baseball pitchers create are so extreme that if it weren't for the muscles around the upper extremity that protect it, it would tear that ligament in just one throw.
Jeez.
And so what you have to be, technique is so important in pitching, and it is the cause of all injuries, and even hip tightness can lead to shoulder and elbow injuries in pitching. And obviously it's not quite that extreme in tennis because, again, the racket provides so much of a more, and you're adding 2 feet or so to the end of your hand, so it creates
right.
so much more leverage. But it's the same thing. If you're not transferring the power efficiently and correctly, you will get overuse injuries, and those little muscles cannot take the force and the stress the way the big muscles can. So
I'm curious, in your experience, and obviously there's, I know you don't have scientific numbers here, but in your experience in dealing with amateur athletes who just play sports recreationally or maybe scholastically, how many injuries that you see are probably the directly related to like what we're talking about, using smaller parts of the body and incorrect technique, basically?
Well, it's luckily for tennis, you know, most of the overuse things you get tennis elbow, which is sort of a different type of overuse syndrome, but and you certainly at especially at higher levels can get shoulder injuries.
Sure.
You know, Maria Sharapova is out with a rotator cuff injury, so you can certainly get shoulder injuries, but it's not the most common sport by far. I mean, you know, if you look at baseball, for every pitcher who makes it pro, there were probably 50 kids who pitched just as well but got injured along the way and just
right.
didn't have the durability. And it's just a sport that's very traumatic to the upper extremity. So, you know, technique is critically important, especially, you know, probably more so for the 35 and 40 year olds who are playing a sport, you know, as a part time when they have a job and life to juggle, and you get out here and there, and
sure.
it's critical to have good technique and not to allow that, you know, to go down that cascade of injury.
Definitely. Okay, so basically, in wrapping up, as far as the technique part goes, use of core first and then relaxation of arm and shoulder and hand. Those are the two kind of main things we're getting at here. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That is a very good summary of the concept of the kinetic chain.
Okay. All right. Well, anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for being here, and great to have you on. I know that you have a website, right? I'd be happy to let you plug that.
Thank you. I do. It's my personal website, which kind of explains what I am, and my philosophy is it's pretty simple. It's www.drraffo.com, and it's R-A-F as in Frank, F as in Franco, so no period, just D-R-R-A-F-F-O.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And by the way, you're doing great in your lessons. You've really improved a lot, and I look forward to continuing to work with you.
Me too.
Right. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Dr. Chris, for stopping by, and maybe we'll have you back on the show someday. I know that you're working on a new website too. I'll have you back on to answer a question when you get your new site up.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, have a good night, and thanks again.
Thanks, Ian.
All right. Take care.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
All right, let's go ahead and get going with the rest of the podcast here. We have some questions to answer from a listener. And our listener question today is brought in from Howard in Edmonton, Canada. Howard wrote to me just a couple days ago, I think, and said, in a fast doubles exchange when I'm at the baseline and my opponents are either hitting very hard and moving me around because my partner is too afraid to let the ball pass them in the alley and so hogs it and opens up a lot of court, or my opponents have come to the net and are punching volleys at me and taking time away from me, I get caught with the wrong grip a lot. I use a hybrid forehand, which he says means between Eastern and semi-Western, and an extreme backhand grip, one-handed grip, which I assume means his knuckles are up on the top of the grip in a one-handed backhand grip. And that's his question. He just says, help. Well, certainly, I'd be happy to help, Howard. It sounds like you're getting rushed when you're back at the baseline in your doubles play, and you're just not quite sure which grip you should be waiting in. And kind of what's the best way of handling that when you're getting rushed? Howard posts here that he's a 3.0 level player, by the way. All right, well, let's talk about that. Which grip to wait in at the baseline? And this applies really to singles and doubles. And what I recommend, Howard, is that you wait in the grip of whatever ground stroke you hit more confidently. In other words, if your forehand ground stroke is your favorite, then I would recommend waiting with a forehand ground stroke grip, which you say is between an Eastern and a semi-Western forehand grip. The reason for that is, if the ball comes right at you, and you have to make a choice between a forehand and a backhand, you're more likely to make a stronger swing after taking whichever side that is. So if the ball comes right at you in your doubles play, you're at the baseline, and you kind of have the choice between a forehand or a backhand, or maybe even it's a little bit on your backhand side, but you have a little bit of time to run around it and hit a forehand anyway, you will probably be best off waiting with a forehand grip. That way, you're more likely to hit a stronger shot in general rather than fumbling around back and forth and barely having enough time. This is how the vast majority of pros prepare for points, that they wait in a ready position for return of serve And also in between shots, they typically go back to whichever grip they prefer, meaning if their backhand is stronger, they wait with a backhand grip. If their forehand is stronger, they wait with a forehand grip in their dominant hand. And that's how they prepare for each incoming shot if they're back on the baseline. And they wait with whichever grip is most confident and whichever is on their stronger side. Really, the only alternative to that, Howard, is waiting with a continental grip, which is in between your forehand and backhand. And once you start waiting with a continental grip, basically you're just hoping that you have time to switch to either your forehand or backhand grip when the ball comes towards you. And the problem with that is, as opposed to only having to switch for one or the other, meaning if you're waiting with a forehand grip because you prefer your forehand more, if it comes to your forehand side, well, great. You're all set. You're all set to swing. If it comes right at you, well, you can move to one side or the other, and obviously you're going to move to the side that you prefer since you have that grip anyway. So great, you get to take your more confident swing and hit a forehand. If it comes to your backhand side, you may actually be able to hit a forehand anyway if you're able to get around the ball. And if you're not, then you will have to switch. You'll have to switch over to your backhand grip. And that would be the one instance out of those three that you would have to actually physically change your grip in order to hit a comfortable shot. However, if you wait with a continental grip, which is your only other real alternative to what I described, then you're going to have to switch your grip either way. If it comes to your backhand side, you're going to have to hit a backhand. Obviously, so you're going to have to switch your grip to a backhand grip. If it comes to your forehand side, you're going to have to switch your forehand grip. And so you'll probably be more rushed that way, or at least feel more rushed than if you were just to wait with whichever is your stronger shot. And even worse than that, with the continental grip, if you really get caught without time to swing, you'll probably just end up using that continental grip to hit the ball, and you'll end up just pushing it or slicing it back with the continental grip, or perhaps lobbing as well, as opposed to taking a good confident swing at the ball, which is what I would much prefer you to do. I would much rather you were in position to hit a more aggressive shot more often. So what I typically recommend to my students is to wait with whichever ground stroke grip is their most confident one, because I want you to be able to hit a good confident swing as much as possible when you're on the baseline, whether it's in doubles or in singles. Now, if you're doing this already, Howard, and you still feel rushed, then that's pretty much it. You're going to have to practice switching more quickly between the two. Or maybe it's that you're hitting with one and not getting back to the other in a ready position, and so you're constantly switching back and forth. Really, there's no way around it. Every high-level player switches from one side to the other, from a forehand to a backhand, because you need to turn that racket face to get it flat so that you can actually make a good, confident swing. There's not going to be one grip that you can hit an aggressive ground stroke with on both sides, both a forehand and a backhand. So unfortunately, if you're already doing what I'm suggesting here by waiting with your confident grip, you're just going to have to get better. You're going to have to improve your reaction time. You're going to have to improve switching back and forth between those two grips. Now, possibly even more importantly than your main question, I have a question for you as far as your doubles play goes, and I don't blame you at all for asking this question. Being a 3.0 player, this is what you're describing as far as your point play goes is very, very typical. But my question for you is, what the heck are you doing on the baseline? This is doubles. I want you to be moving forwards. Good doubles players are confident moving forwards towards the net, so that they can do exactly what you're describing is happening to you. I want you to move in so that you can pressure your opponents. Even if you don't get an easy shot that you can put away, just your very presence at the net is going to pressure your opponents a great deal into having to try better shots and more aggressive shots or more difficult shots. Trying to lob over you is much harder than if you stay back at the baseline and you just give them a whole half of the court that they're able to easily hit to without any pressure at all of having you up there at the net. What you're describing is exactly why one up and one back doubles is the worst position possible. Having one player stay at the baseline and one player stay up at the net is the weakest position in doubles. And I just quickly wrote down three reasons for that. First of all, there's a huge amount of space between the two players. When you're separated from net to baseline, you leave a big amount of space between you and your partner that your opponents can hit between and separate you even further. It just causes confusion when the ball goes down the middle. And then there's the big quarrel between, oh, it was on your side, it was on my side, it was my forehand, it was your forehand, and nobody knows who should have taken the ball. If both players are up there at the net playing aggressively, it's not nearly as much of an issue, and you don't have that wide space between you and your partner. Secondly, one player is lifting the ball upwards on every shot. And that's you in the situation that that you were talking about, being the person at the baseline. You have to lift the ball on every shot just to get it over the net, because being at the baseline, you're 40 feet away from the net, and you have to make an upward swing in order to clear the top of the net and hit to the other side. If you're not swinging upwards, if you're slicing the ball, then your face is open. Either way, the ball has to be lifted, and it needs to go upwards. This is a problem because if your opponents are coming forwards to the net, they're going to have the opportunity to then hit down at you and at your partner. That's a problem because now they're attacking. And thirdly, the other player, your partner, is a sitting duck at the net when your opponents do get an easy shot. If they both come to the net, like you're describing that they sometimes do, all they have to do is keep the ball to you until they get something that's high and easy for them to attack on, and then all of a sudden your partner becomes a target instead of being something that's good for you. Instead of being an asset, all of a sudden they become the thing that your opponents are aiming for. And obviously that's not something your partner wants or that you want, because it takes a lot of time away from them. So rather than playing one up, one back, and describing what you're talking about in your point play, you've got two options here, basically, Howard. You're either better off just playing double back, and that would be better than what you're describing currently, having one up, one back, and your partner up there at the net. You'd be better off just having both of you at the baseline so that you don't have the liability of your partner just sitting over there in the alley and just basically being target practice when your opponents get easy shots. And meanwhile, you're running all over the baseline trying to retrieve everything that's deep. Or ultimately, what I prefer, Howard, is that you improve your net game and your transition game so that you can avoid this problem altogether. And you can be confident in moving forwards and getting to the net with your partner. And that way you can pressure your opponents right back. And you can take time away from them instead of staying back on the baseline and giving them the time to move forwards and attack against you. This is something that I really feel strongly about. I teach a lot of doubles at the club where I instruct. We have seven different ladies teams, teams of players that they have two different seasons during the year, and each team has five doubles positions. So that's 35 doubles matches that get played every week at my club just for those leagues, not including everything else that happens at the club. And I teach and help instruct and do a team practice for all of those teams. And this is a topic that gets brought up all the time. And really, if you truly want to work long-term for having the best game possible, if you're a doubles player and you want to practice for long-term thinking, if you want your game to be the best possible down the road, being more comfortable moving forwards is going to be your best play in doubles for sure, for being a good solid doubles player. It's not going to win every point. There's no magic bullet in doubles where you play this formation and you just win. You're going to lose points. Yes, you're going to get lobbed once in a while, and your opponents will hit the occasional passing shot. But just trust me on this one. If you want to advance and become a higher level player in your doubles, being more comfortable at the net is the way to go. And Howard, just in all fairness here, it's very possible I preached that whole sermon on closing forwards into the net, and maybe you just get caught back once in a while, and most of the time you are closing forwards. That's very possible. Just wanted to throw that out there. I'm not yelling at you. It's just a good topic that I wanted to discuss that was kind of brought up by the point situation that you were describing. If you are getting caught in this situation often, let me encourage you, get forwards, get moving forwards, and get comfortable at the net as soon as possible. It will pay dividends very quickly in your doubles play. Howard, thanks a lot for the question. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to hear back from you and let me know if it was a help to you and if I can help you in any other way. All right, that does it for the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 41. Thank you very much for joining me today. As always, I know that you could have spent your time doing anything while you were listening to this podcast, and I truly appreciate that you've spent your time with me trying to improve your tennis game. It's exciting to me that there's lots of players out there who are really passionate about the game and excited about trying to improve, and being a part of that and trying to help build better players is exactly what I'm going for. So as always, if you have any questions about your game whatsoever, feel free to write me at ian@essentialtennis.com. That's I-A-N. Or you can go to essentialtennis.com and go to the forums, and you can post your questions there. Or you can go to contact@essentialtennis.com and fill out the little form there. Lots of ways to get a hold of me. All right, that's it for today. Thanks very much for joining me, and I'll be back on November 1st with episode number 42. In the meantime, happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and take care and good luck with your tennis.